guys, welcome back to Finding the Funny. We're now in season 3 and I'm so excited because we're going to be kind of traveling around and talking to comics that are in a variety of comedy scenes. So tonight we're going to be talking to Dante Barnett, who's up in Seattle, Washington. He runs Suitman Productions and it was definitely a fun conversation. Hope you guys enjoy. All right, are you there?
Yes, ma'am.
Sweet. Let's go ahead and get everything started. So I am Stephanie Michelle. This is Finding the Funny, and I am here with Dante Barnett. Did I get that right?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm always terrified I'm going to like slaughter somebody's name in a whole new way.
Nah, there's no new way to slaughter by. People either say Duante, Dwayne, Duant. I think the best I had is the guy on the roast said it's like do on to others is if you wish for them to do on to you. That's pretty good.
That's a new one. All right. I like it. So, okay, you actually, that's, you know what, because we already started with that, you joke about your name being horribly said on stage. How did you start doing that?
But my name's Dante. It's actually spelled all fucked up, though. It's a D-U-A-N-T-E. So I get everything from Duante to Duant. I even get Dwayne every once in a while, like the T silent and shit. Worst part for me, though, is I go to a new job or the doctor's office, and people have the balls to ask me if I spell my name right. Like, that's not an integral skill at kindergarten. But I figured out my name's too ethnic for my resume. I've got a master's degree, and the only calls I get for jobs are like liquor store manager, garbage man, shit like that. So I decided to go by my middle name, right? It's Edward. Yeah, calls got way better. I got calls for like IT, management, financials and shit. There's only one problem. We get to the interview, and they're looking for an Edward. And they got a Dante, if you know what I'm saying. And even worse than that, a lot of white people think we're the only ones with fucked up names. It's not true. Went to the doctor's office for the girl's name tag. It was G-A-N-E-L-L. And I told her, that's a beautiful way to spell Janelle. And she said, no, sir. My name's Gainel. Yeah, like you. I was like, so like A-L with a G. And she's like, that's inappropriate. And I was like, bitch, I'm just trying to marry her name. Shit.
It was after about 6 months in, maybe not 6 months, maybe 4 to 5 months in. One day I just went up there and went with it. But I usually get Duante, Duant. Somebody asked me to use gave me the Dwayne, like there's a silent T, right? But it's something I have to address, right? Because there's two things to that. Somebody always said your comedy should be specific to you, right?
Yeah.
And then there's certain things that you're blessed with that are given, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's been so hilarious because I specialize in non-white comedy as a producer, if you didn't notice, right? So most of my shows are non-white people, right? And everybody's got a messed up name, and we've all had a Bill Bob Carrot or whatever, Jan, call us the wrong name and just basically tell us to deal with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's something that people can also identify with, you know? Your name's spelled decently right, I see, right? There's no way to really mess that up, right?
People but do. You,
is it Stefan? You've got a boy's
name? I've gotten like... Stefan. I get Stefani. Yeah, I've gotten all sorts of... People mess up my name on a regular... I have people that don't even call me by my first name. They call me by Michelle because they see that. So... Yeah, no, I get it. Names are weird.
So you get what I'm saying. And seriously, these privileged white folks are just like, well, maybe you should have made it more easy for me to understand. You're like, maybe you should have asked. You know what I mean? Like, the one I always get is I know when I got a telemarketer, if they're smart, because they go, Mr. Barnett. That's
yeah. Well, and it's,
that's when you're really thinking.
I love it because so... My maiden name is Salazar, and I was in the military, and people used to just call me Sal because they would get to the Z and completely lose all ability to say my last name. So I went by Sal for years, which I'm like, I think Salazar is insanely easy to say, but nobody could say it. So
I'm with you.
It's a part of it. I get it.
And that's the other part is, you know, I have a joke I follow up where I'm like, you know, white people have fucked up names too. And that always gets a great laugh from minorities because they're like, fuck yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want my daughter named Rainbow Flower. What the hell? Get your shit together. So there's definitely a paradigm in a lot of the stuff I do, and it's polarizing, you know. I'm mixed, so I joke about that, you know what I mean? And it doesn't sit well with a lot of people, but there's a lot of people that, like, I'm their spirit animal. You know what I mean? They're like, this guy is speaking my mind. I like what this guy's putting down. I wish I'd have said that to my boss. So it's just, you know, personal experiences that people can relate with.
There you go. And so you do comedy out of what area?
Seattle, Washington.
Seattle, Washington. So because I met you on a Pacific Northwest group. So.
Yeah.
How do you think doing comedy is up there versus other communities?
It's different. So I've been to Toronto. I've been to BC and done comedy in that scene. I've been to Boise and done comedy in that scene. And I've been to Portland and done comedy in that scene. And I'd say Portland and Seattle and BC, Canada, they're all the same. And what I mean by that is you have three types of comedians. You have edgelords, which seem like they're going to say whatever racist, sexist thing they can say, but I'm a comedian, so it's okay.
Yes.
Right? I've got this mic, so there should be no consequences on what I'm saying, because it's a joke, dude, right?
There you go.
And then you're going to have your super liberals, right, who want to support us, but seem like they can't handle when a black guy says the N-word on the microphone. Like,
okay.
I have a right to do that, you know? It's okay to, can I laugh? I don't know. I wanted to say a joke with that word, but you won't let me. Is no, you can't, but I can. That's what I get, right? And then the last one is you have a high LGBTQ liberal community.
Okay.
And I've noticed that's just like, there's no black comedy out here, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, there's black comics, but there's no black comedy scene.
Okay.
And Portland, I guess, could say they do have a black comedy scene a little bit more than we do, but that's pretty much what you go to. So you're either going to like this super edgy place where people are going to say shit that's probably going to offend you, or you're going to this pro liberal place where I'm going to say stuff that's going to offend them. Like, I love it when people get mad that I tell black jokes. Like, I'm not half black. Right?
Crazy.
And then the last one is you're going to go to a show where I'm kind of a sexual prude, you know what I mean? I don't do things, I don't know what groceries are, you know what I mean? And when I go to those shows, I'm usually the one that's kind of offended, or you know what I mean? Like, I feel a little dirty when I leave, right? So it's just different, you know what I mean? Like, not in a bad way, but how do you respond to certain things, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
it's a different scene, you know what I mean? This ain't your mama's comedy scene is definitely an idea of what you look at. Because from one end, you're going to go to areas like Tacoma, where they're going to tell you some jokes that are going to offend you, and you're going to have five or six white guys making jokes about people that they don't identify as, and you're like, that's not cool. You go to Seattle, downtown Seattle, to the LGBTQ area, you're going to probably hear some sex jokes that you weren't ready for. You know what I mean? And then when you go to the liberal place, it's just kind of vanilla, but at least, you know, they're trying not to offend anybody. And that's kind of like the Seattle scene. You know what I mean? Like, there's no in-betweens. I'm trying to find a niche that's kind of in-between there. That's where I found my success and my motivation.
Yeah.
But that's kind of where we're at. You know what I mean? Like, there's no... I don't think my joke daddy's a Mexican comedian out here and he's trying to start to perform. He's like, I'd love to start a show for Mexican people. So why don't you? You know what I mean? Like, there's no Hispanic scene out here. There's no club that you go to get, you know, Hispanic comedy. We don't have a comedy club either where they're speaking all Spanish, because we do have a high Spanish population out here.
Yeah.
So it would be interesting to see something along those lines. You know what I mean? It'd be interesting to see We do have a couple of Asian producers who are doing crazy, their version of Crazy Woke Asians, so that was kind of cool to see.
Okay.
But we really don't, we have the diversity on the scene. We just so much haven't had other nationalities really step up and create their own area or center or club.
Got it. So that's interesting because you do have a lot of, it looks like you do have a lot of groups, just not based on any like ethnic areas so much. Oh, it's white. Very politically drawn.
Yeah, white. We have white areas. We have more white areas, but we don't have any ethnic areas per se. No. It's like, and when you think about the stuff going on in Seattle and Portland,
yeah,
and you look in the news, we're blowing up shit. We're rioting, right? We're having, I've been in the middle of those riots, right? We're having all this crazy stuff happen because that's kind of who we are, you know what I mean? We're this politically charged, but we're not racist, even though we're like, that's the undertone. Nobody's going to talk about the racism. We're just going to talk about the political issues. And that's, that comes out in our comedy scene, you know what I mean? Like, same idea. Oh, we're LGBTQ friendly here. Oh, we're not going to say the N word here, right? that's about as good as you get.
I have not been lucky enough to do comedy in Seattle, but I have done comedy in Portland. And I ended up being in a very liberal, anti-offend room. That was fun. I wasn't expecting
it. You know what I'm talking about then.
Yeah. I kind of went in and I was like, I know this joke is going to piss them off. So I was like, I'm just going to go into this joke hard then. That's all I can do. Pissed off half the room and made the other half laugh. And I don't think there was anything I could hope for more than in that moment. But so no, I know exactly what you're talking about. It's interesting when you go into a room and you're like, I'm probably going to offend them. Like, there's no way around it.
I do a joke about my white people calling me master, right?
Okay, I did hear that joke in the ones you sent me, too.
And I did that joke at the Elks Lodge in Lakewood.
Okay.
And you know how some Elks Lodges are black and most of them are white?
Yeah.
This was not a black Elks Lodge.
Oh, okay.
And the only people that laughed at my joke were the black comedians and the black people that showed up. Was this the rest of the white people in the room? Oh, the music fucking stopped, and he thought I'd ask for Pace Picante, Pace Salsa. Remember that commercial where he's like,
"Oh yeah,"
and they're like, "Get a rope." Mm-hmm. That's exactly like, we don't call black people master. That's not funny. And the producer who's a black guy was like, "Yeah, they're." So mad about that joke.
Oh my gosh.
They're mad about that joke. We're still mad about calling them master for 240 fucking years. Fuck them. You know what I mean? Like, what are you kidding me? So I think that's the craziest part, is when you're a minority.
Yeah.
And you do a joke that upsets white people or Caucasians, they're like, that's racist. You're like, that's not racist. I'm not in power. There's no negative connotation with this. You just don't like the joke because it makes you feel uncomfortable. That's not racist. That's just life. You know what I mean? Like, come on, man. Don't be that guy.
So how long have you been doing comedy?
About 2 years. 5 months and 3 weeks. Sorry, I had a hiccup. Ooh, my exact 2.5 year mark.
Okay. When you paused, I thought you were going to give me some like super arbitrary number, and then you came in super specific. So I love it. Ah, did I lose you?
I've got OCD. Yeah, I'm a super nerd if you didn't know.
No, I love it. I can't give an actual date from when I got on because I didn't plan it. It kind of happened on accident. So I'm always jealous of the people that are like, this is the first time I went on stage and this is the first day I bought my notebook. And I'm like, oh, I have none of that.
That's the crazy part, is I my first set's actually on my YouTube channel.
Okay, how was that?
I've gone back and watched it, and my my first set contains jokes that I still do.
Oh wow, okay.
And my master's joke was one of my first jokes, and I've wrote it better and put some other jokes around it to make it better.
Mm-hmm.
But some of my first jokes were stuff that I'd been thinking about doing for years and wanted to do comedy, and so there's a difference when it's like that, you know what I mean? Like, a lot of people, their first jokes were, hey, I fart and I stink and all these stupid shit. You're like, yeah, you're going to have to grow a lot. My first set was decent, you know what I mean? Like, I can look back at it. My first set was 5 minutes.
Oh, wow. Okay. Very cool.
And it wasn't an open mic. It was somebody's show who I ended up knowing, but it was like, you know, their variety show, not so much a show. And so I went there and I did 4:41, and then I'd forgot some jokes I wanted to tell, so I went back and grabbed the mic and told those two that's not recorded. She was like, people, I didn't know you couldn't do that. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know. You know what I mean? I didn't know any better, right? Ignorance is bliss. And I got done, and one of the guys I work with who's been doing comedy forever was like, so how long have you been doing comedy? Like 6, 7, 8 months? I said, no, that's my first time. He said, oh, good job, man. You got some laughs. Seems like you had a good time. And the other people are sitting there and all like, it's not how my first time went. My first time I bombed. It sounds like you suck. Like, right? So it was there was different. Plus, I went through a bad divorce at that time, and there's a whole bunch of history with when I started comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll never forget that date. You know what I mean? It was all on purpose, and then I just hit the ground running from there. So it's, you know what I mean? Like, some people, like you said, it's I kind of want to do it. Finally, my friends talked me into it. Nah, I'd been wanting to do comedy for like 36 years, and I finally, you know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't by accident. It was planned.
Yeah, no, I had no intention of ever getting on stage. It was purely 100% a dare. And I am not the kind of person to say no to a dare. And so I did it, and then I fell in love, and now I keep doing it. But so the first time you got on stage, what made you do it? Like you said, you wanted to do it for 36 years. What was the thing that finally got you up there?
The year before that, my mom died.
Okay, I'm sorry.
And I'm mad she's gone, right? But yeah. I'm not mad she's dead because it changed who I was.
Yeah.
And I had a conversation with my roommate about you never change your experiences because your experiences are a combination of things who make you who you are, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fuck with growing up. I sound all prophetic and shit.
There you go.
right? I'm an adult now, right? But no, I had this talk with somebody. Great pain, great anguish usually cause you to change and do better things.
Yeah.
And when my mom passed away, I decided to file for divorce. I'd left my family, not left, but you know what I mean? I needed to find myself. And comedy was one of those things that helped me. I spent my first 6 weeks doing comedy homeless in my car.
Oh,
but
wow.
Every night I'd do 3 or 4 sets. And that was what's kind of saved me and also made me find who I am. Like, I'm a decent comedian, right? I'm funny, but my producing, Suitman Productions, is what separates me. That's why I'm on your podcast, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm on everybody's podcast. It's not because I'm really that funny. It's my productions are different, right? And none of that wouldn't have happened without my mom. None of that would have drove me to be who I want to be or find what I love without losing my mom. And that really was my catalyst. You know what I mean? Like, fuck this. Am I happy? Do the people around me love me, right? Am I happy doing what I'm doing? I mean, I was teaching at the time at Green River, part-time, making decent money, and I was just like, this isn't me. They're never going to pay me. They're not. I'm just sitting here, wait, you know what I mean? And I don't know, comedy's always something I wanted to do, but putting laughter on people's face, making sure everybody a chance gets to tell their jokes, making sure these bullies aren't bullying good comedians just because they're not white males who are in their circle, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's an awesome feeling. And then the best part is, with all the stuff I do now, when I talk to people and I give out my swag and my stickers, I've got my Black and Proud stickers, my Autastic Artist stickers, and even my Suitman stickers, the stuff that I'm representing, when I give it to people, their face brightens up.
Mm-hmm.
When you give somebody an Autastic Mind sticker and I tell them I do a podcast for autistic people, That shit, my niece is autistic. They'd love to watch that. I'd definitely love for them to see something where they're, you know what I mean? I saw your face change, right? But that's what I get, that, oh, and people really feel that way. When I was at inauguration and I'm giving little black girls black and proud stickers, which are black unicorns with rainbow hair, and the little girls are losing their shit. That's worth it. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing that beats that feeling.
Well, and just that representation is such a huge thing. And I tend to, like, I was talking to somebody, some really similar lines the other day. We were talking about how much I love comic books, but it wasn't until I started seeing girls as superheroes that I was like, oh, okay, I really like this now, because it's just that representation of being able to see yourself on screen. And I think the same way for comics is so important.
Oh man, I tell people, let's take it one step further. The Obama election, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The Kamala inauguration, for little black girls to see a black fight, little black vest, that's a woman, right? For us who were minorities, do you know what we used to always say to our parents when they say you can be anything you want? Well, I can't be president, I'm black. I mean, fuck, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Your parents would be like, ah, you got a point. They'll never elect a black guy to be president. Can't say that anymore.
Yeah.
Right? That is the ultimate representation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That is the ultimate ability to believe you can do anything you want. And I had a real shitty conversation with a shitty comic, but it was a good conversation because I was able to bring out some good points. And I said, how many black producers are there out there? How many do you know in your area, Stephanie?
In my area, actually, there's quite a few. I think that's one of the perks about being in Southern California is that diversity is such a wide aspect. Granted, there are still shows that is not the case.
But you're getting my point, right?
Yeah.
And that's only because I'm in Southern California. How many black producers are in North Dakota? How many black producers are in Idaho? How many black producers are in Boise, Utah, Wyoming? None, right? So when we tip the scales, what, 3, maybe 4, maybe 5% of booking decisions are made by somebody of African-American descent?
Mm-hmm.
Non-white, let's say total, there's maybe 10 to 15% if you add in white women, right?
Yeah.
They're a minority, but they're still white, right?
Uh-huh.
And he was like, what's that supposed to mean? I said, so that means that you have white humor or the white demographic deciding what's funny and who to book. You don't understand how that could be biased? If 80 to 90% of people are in your culture or understand your culture, how are they ever going to think you're funny?
So this is, I find it interesting just because I had to, even when I was like putting my name out there and what I was going to go with, I struggled wanting to use my maiden name because I didn't want to use my ex-husband's last name. So it's like, do I use my maiden name? Do I use Salazar? I ended up not. Purely, and it was such a horrible decision, but I sat there and had to go, okay, people are going to see Salazar. They're going to say, oh, this is a Hispanic comic. And I struggled with that because I didn't want to be known as a Hispanic comic. I didn't want to be known or get booked as a female comic. I wanted to get booked as a comic. So I ended up dropping that from my name. And now people look at me. We have to, as a minority, we have to take our ethnicity and what just that makes people assume as something that we think about from the very beginning, which I find interesting that my friends that are not minorities never thought about. That was never an
issue.
They
don't have to deal with, yeah.
No. And so I find it interesting that that's been such a forefront of when you're booking shows and how you want to be represented up there in Seattle. So I'm super excited.
So that's my thing is that I'm turning it on its head. Oh, you're a white male? Oh, I'm sorry. I don't have a show for you.
Yeah.
Get to the back of the bus. I'll give you the scraps that are left. And some guy was like, that's racist. I said, no, it's not racist. I'm not booking you. I'm not booking you because you're white. I'm just booking you because you're non-white. And that hurts their feelings. It mm-hmm. makes them mad. They don't get it. What if I did an all-white show? Okay, that'd be Thursday at the Laugh Factory, or that'd be Friday at the Comedy Store. Not saying literally about these particular establishments,
yeah.
But that's what it's called. It's called a Thursday.
Yeah.
Right? It's called a Friday. Like, they don't have to say it's whites only. The fuck, I look at the flyer and I don't see anybody. Mm-hmm. You don't have to say it, right? So that's why I have to do this.
Yeah.
And if you're telling me you're mad that one producer in the whole state of Washington is making sure people who aren't white and male get stage time, just one guy, and you're mad about that, you're a prick. Like, you're really, you're probably mad that there's BET and Univision too, you prick, right? Yeah. So, it's, you know what I'm saying? Like, I've faced so much gruff from those people that are usually within power.
Mm-hmm.
And it brings me to a good segue. I hate people who, I've really had this argument, and I argue this a ton, and especially with people when they ask me my philosophy. And they're like, how do you book people? And I say, I book good people.
Yeah.
I don't worry about the funny. And then, well, you've got to worry about the funny somewhere. Nah, not really. Because if I book a ton of good people, do you know what happens?
Hmm.
Is everybody gets along. And before the show, there's no attitudes. There's no clicks. There's no jokes being said about somebody else on stage that ruins their attitude, right? Everybody's having a good time. So nobody's going up there in a bad attitude when they do their set. And then here's the best part. Do you know what most good people do?
Hmm.
They bring people.
They do. It's a crazy concept that comics bring people.
Right? Now, they could still be funny and bring people, but only good funny people bring people because people want to see their good friends. And then even if they're not funny, do you know what the people that they bring have?
Hmm.
Lowered expectations. They know their friend's not that funny, but I'm going to come support him, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you put 6, 7, 8 people on a show. Everybody's got 10 minutes, so there's variety. Nobody's getting that shitty person's only struggling for 4 or 5 minutes because everybody's got 3 or 4 good minutes of material usually, right?
Yeah.
What you find is there's an ebb and flow. And then even though you don't think they're funny, the people in the audience who don't think you're funny think they're funny. And there's a balance, right? And then you have good people who want to follow you, and their people want to follow you, and they want to be repeat customers, and you have a good environment. Are my shows the funniest? Maybe not. But the atmosphere, do my shows have the best atmosphere? I think so. And there's something to be said for that when you're an audience member.
Yeah. Definitely.
You know what I mean? There's something to be said when you know all 8 people you saw had a good time. There was no awkwardness. I didn't get told a rape joke. I didn't get told a Mexican joke. I didn't get told a dick joke. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't get offended.
Okay.
There's something to be said for that.
So when you're booking shows, you want just an overall environment that's kind of friendly for everybody, audience included, then?
I book shows with my audience in mind.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is the biggest compliment I get at the end of the shows is people are like, oh my God, I love this show. I felt so represented on stage. I've never seen this anywhere else.
Okay. That's definitely interesting. I appreciate that. Just because it's an interesting sentiment. Like, just it's very different than how we is here. And out here, it's...
Oh, how it is everywhere.
Well, that's true. Very, very true.
I told somebody, like, I'm planning on being big, like Jay-Z big, like taking over comedy big. And I was like, because I'm trying to do something totally different. And I believe in it with conviction. And think about if you could go to a club and know that you weren't going to get harassed one day. Think about if you knew you could go to a club and you weren't going to have somebody make fun of your last name being Salazar. Or the fact being a female Mexican comedian isn't a negative. How would you feel?
It would almost like it wasn't more? Comedy.
What would you say?
I said it's almost like it's not even comedy anymore.
What? Right? It sounds like a party, right? Like we're what? Just having... That's what a Soup Man show is. If you haven't watched one, watch one. You can feel the atmosphere by watching it on YouTube. There's 18 shows on there. But you'll have that feeling that this isn't a regular comedy club. This isn't a regular comedy environment. There's no tension. There's no... Do you get what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
no,
I appreciate it.
It happens. People are going to have some bad jokes on my shows. It happens. But there's no real, like, oh, my God, did that guy really go up? Oh, my God, did he really say that? Because we're all in the same connective tissue. You know what I mean? I don't know how to put it. It's gotten, you know, you're going to get some bad apples. You get some bad acts.
Oh, but definitely.
I really don't get that, because you've got to really look at what I'm doing and say, I want to be a jerk on all these kind of shows. There's no way to do that. You know what I mean? When you're saying, okay, I'm going to do a show with other black women, there's no way you're really coming into an attitude with that. When you're like, yeah, everybody on the show is mixed and misidentified. We all deal with the what are yous. It's hard to, you get what I mean? Like, everybody's got the same background, same story. Mixed and Misidentified has been one of my funnest shows because there's no show for mixies. In real life, we don't have any group we actually identify with or align with at all times. And when I got the mixies together, they're always like, holy fuck, this is awesome. Everybody here understands what this feels like, and nobody here knows what they are exactly, and nobody knows who we are by looking at us, right? That's an awesome feeling. And then, you know, being educated enough to, like, I gave Sarah Carey a hard time. She said I'm Maltese and Sicilian, and I was like, if that isn't the most white privileged shit to say, they're the same fucking island. And she was like, nobody usually knows that. You're pretty fucking smart. People no, there's the Maltese dog. I said, well, that's a different conversation. But yes, you know what I mean? And then, and Maltese and Sicilian is, guess what? You're still white fuckers. So I don't know if you missed the memo, but you're not really mixed. You're still white. But even given her, you know, that's a joke and I'm joking around, but it is true. Sicilians and Italians act like they're not white. You're fucking European. It's the same. What the fuck? But sorry.
It's okay.
I digress, right? But
it's one of the curses of being a comic. We get on a tangent, we go with it, and I've learned just to let them happen.
That's just a sore button for me when we talk about white folks, Italians not believing they're white. That's all. But it's you know what I mean? But it's one of those where it's a weird, you know what I'm saying? Like, even your smile, I see your face when I ask you some of these things, and you're like, that would be weirdly awesome. You know what I mean? Like, is that comedy? Does that even count? Like, you mean I'm not gonna get hit on when I sign up? No. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not gonna have to deal with some douchey joke while I'm walking to this list? No.
Yeah. Well, it's always whenever I see my name on a flyer, it's that, did I get booked because they think I'm funny, or did they get booked because they need a female on the show? And that's such a weird thing to play into your head that you kind of start questioning it sometimes. And of course, then you have people that feed those doubts into your mind as well. But yeah, like, that's, I would love to know that I was getting booked on a show because I was funny, not because I'm hitting a quota.
And a lot of people would look at me and say, well, you're just hitting a quota on Dante's show because you're a womanist. Well, yeah, you are. But this is a women's show. And I'm weeding out who's good. And the more better you do on a show, the more you'll see me book you. So then once you've got booked the first time, the second and third bookings are because I believed you were successful, right? And then the funny part is most of you women are funny. It's just you're telling jokes to chauvinistic male pricks. Or the one I love are the chauvinistic female pricks.
You know what's funny is I think, you know, I do better with the guys than I do with the girls.
And we're all different, but I mean, there's always those women that are like, are women even funny?
Yeah.
Because do you understand, I did Momedy in real life. Half my show, almost all the shows I do were done in real life in Seattle before pandemic.
Okay.
And so I remember I was hanging up posters for Momedy, and people were like, you did a whole lineup of women? Yeah, they're... Women aren't really funny, are they? I mean, are these going to be funny women? I was like, bitch, you're a woman. That's so anti-feminist. You know, like, how can you say that? Like, my grandma told me once she didn't believe Hillary Clinton should be president because she's a woman. I was like, grandma, you're a woman. Like, come on. Like, get... you know what I mean? But there's also... It's just a stigma. And so I think when you do what I'm doing and you tell people, hey, we're going to have 8 women for you to laugh at, people come ready to laugh at you.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
Oh, definitely. I know I've done all female shows and I've done all Hispanic shows. I've done shows that everybody on the lineup was mixed. And it's definitely a different... When everybody comes in on an even playing field and you're not walking in the door as the token female or the token Hispanic or the token whatever group you're fitting, you kind of walk in like, okay, I can do this and I deserve to be here.
Yeah, you have a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Like everybody walks in the door and you all get backstage and we're shaking hands. Hey, you're not going to do anything to offend me. Nice to meet you. Hey, you're not going to do anything to offend me either. Hey, we should all be able to get along. All right. I mean, there's going to be some assholes and douchebags, but you know what I mean? Nobody's really going to do anything too hurtful when you're all in the same group.
Yeah. No, it's definitely interesting. I do appreciate it. Like I said, I just like the idea of not feeling like you're like stepping in the door trying to prove something just because you got booked there as the only not male white comic on a show.
Oh, this is why we don't book Mexican girls. This Stephanie chick, I'm telling you, she sucks.
Right
here. Then you're like, damn it. There's been no other Mexican girls since me. Did I do something wrong?
Yeah,
did
you're I like, ruin this? I messed it up for everybody all in one shot.
I love that. Or when comics are like, so what's it like being black in a comic? And you're like, fuck, I didn't know I was black. I thought I was mixed, but it's hard, I guess. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know. I had somebody point that out. Like, I have a show coming up and I'm the only female on the whole lineup and it's a whole project. And I'm just like, damn it, I can't fuck it up because I can't fuck it up for any other females after me. You're like, shit. All this extra pressure now all of a sudden.
I think that's the hard feeling for a lot of these entertainers.
Oh, yeah.
Is now that we're turning it back on them. It's weird being the only white guy on this show. Okay, welcome to most of my shows I do.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
I've learned so much at this show. I bet you have. If you'd shut up, you'd probably learn more from your friends.
Yeah.
Like, you have these conversations with these comics, and you're like, this is a microcosm of the macrocosm of real life when you come to our urban or cultural areas and you're learning these lessons. Maybe you should start learning them everywhere.
No, definitely.
And that's, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know how many white comics have came to, I've been dropped in on by white comics in real life in my shows and my diversity shows and even some online. And they see me after, that was really a cool idea. That was really different. What the fuck did you think was going to happen? Like, you didn't know this was going to be a different experience. You didn't know you were probably going to learn something about Filipino food because half my lineup are mixed people with Filipino. So they're going to talk about their lumpias and, you know what I mean? And their F's and their P's and being told they should be a nurse. Like, some of these things are not racist. They're really your culture. But when you make fun of them as a white guy, it's racist. When the people who are identifying with this stuff tell you, it's culture. And I, you know what I'm saying? That's the line that these shows give, is that it's not just comedy, it's culture, because you've got a whole group of people talking about their culture. It's a cultural experience for a lot of people. And that's, I mean, one of the best feelings I'm having is I'm doing stuff that isn't about me anymore.
Yeah.
It's about representing a culture. Autistic Artists is about people on the spectrum. We're paying guests to come. Our long-term goal is to buy their product as being part of a guest. So we've bought their merchandise. We're going to give away their merchandise, right, to listeners. And we're talking about autistic people being successful in the arts. Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
No, I'm on the spectrum. If you can't tell, I'm a little Asperger's. I don't know how to stop. I cuss a lot, right?
It's okay.
On my mind. Right? It's all good. I love myself. I'm not going to cry. But I have somebody who works with me who's in the community. That's all they do. So she gives me validity. Uh-huh. And my artist that does all my logos and my posters, I didn't know, but she's autistic too.
Well, there you go.
And so when I brought up this idea about getting logo work, she says, oh, I love that idea. I'm autistic. Oh, shit. No wonder why we get along so well. Because I kind of got a radar for this shit. I get along with them because I think like them. I just look like this, you know what I mean? We both socially awkwardly hang out and I don't notice, and I'm socially awkward, I just look like this, so I get by okay. And like my best friend who's on the show, she's known me for 20 years, the one that gives us validity.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I've always thought you were a little special. I was, well, fuck you, thanks. You know what I mean? Like, all right, you know? And then you think back and I was always in portable classes in school. But I was smart, so I wasn't in the bad ones. I was in the one where we're still just learning stuff. but I'd get to play Nintendo when I got done with my work, which was like 10 minutes. You know, but you know what I mean? It was, but I don't think back of this. I ended up graduating early. I'm not special. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the fuck you are, dude. You got some fucking problems, right? But the representation of that means more than anything else. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like the movement, when this really hits and, you know, you've got your artistic son who doesn't think he can do anything, and we're interviewing chefs and we're interviewing published writers and we're interviewing a magician. You can't beat that, dude. You know what I mean? I couldn't pay. I mean, I'm going to get paid one day, but I couldn't pay to be in the position I'm in and make the change I'm going to make. And that's a feeling that transcends getting paid.
Oh, definitely.
You know what I mean?
Well, on top of all of the representation, you talk a lot about that. You talk a lot about personal things in your comedy also. So I did want to talk about that for a second, because you talk about your kids.
But it's funny because, you know, I got four daughters and I used to be a single dad. And I remember when she was like six, it was hard. Because being a single dad, you got to shop for your daughter. So I go to Target, right? And I'm walking around and I'm walking around. A lady comes up and goes, "Sir, can I help you?" And I whisper, I go, "Yeah, I'm looking for little girl panties." And she goes, "Sir!" And I go, "Ma'am, I got a daughter!" And I'm like, "This isn't Catch a Predator, fuck you!" And even if it was, they don't want them new, they want them used, fuck you, shit! Yeah, I figure this is a pretty dark crowd, I figure I can pull that out. We got a little bit older, she's 13 now, right? So I go to the same Target and I'm walking around and I'm walking around. And the lady looks at me with an attitude and she goes, "Sir, what do you want now?" And I go, "It's simple. My daughter's 13. She hit puberty. I need some pads." And she goes, "Well, that's easy, sir. Same Miles condoms." And I go, "Bitch, I got five kids. I don't know where those are at either. What the fuck?"
Yep, I talk about my kids. I talk about being divorced. I talk about being mixed and having family hate you for your race. I learned early. So there's two things, two points in this. One part of this is joke stealing, and the other point is authenticity. And okay. I say that so I can write a list and stay on point so I don't ramble for you. Right? But the reason why I say that is the first one was authenticity, right? And the other one I said was, I'll remember in a second. But the authenticity piece.
Yeah.
Or joke stealing. Yep, got you. Sorry. See, AD, it's kicking in again. The authenticity pieces. We talked about my name joke, right?
Yeah.
And we talked about my kids. Those are all things that are real. There isn't a single joke that I've told on stage that you hear out of my probably, I think I got about 30 minutes of material out there somewhere for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
That isn't real. Isn't a human interaction, isn't based on a human interaction, isn't a real story, hasn't happened to me. None of my jokes can be said that way. Now, there are jokes out there I've done that used to be able to, and I don't call them my jokes, because that's where we get to, it's not authentic.
Yeah.
To do a Tinder joke isn't authentic unless it was a Tinder date you went on and is a one in a million experience.
Yeah.
That makes you authentic. I did my name joke, Duante, Dwayne, because it is my name. And now I have people running up to me saying Dwayne in public. And I want to punch them because that's not my fucking name. But they're actually identifying with it. They're, "Hey, Dwayne." And I'm like, "Oh, yeah, you're a fan. Okay, I'm not going to cut you out. Hey, hi, hey," right? But it's authentic, right? It's something to remember you by. When you do these jokes that are about you and about your story, they're going to be told with a passion. They're going to be told with a tempo. A belief, an emotion, you know what I mean? That a joke that you're just writing won't. There's an attachment. There's a pain to my jokes. There's a tear. There's a laugh. Sometimes there's a cry laugh associated with these memories. So I'm really getting a mood. You know what I mean? I'm expressive. You can hear it in the joke. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So by doing that, I think it makes you so much better. Long term, you look at the great comedians. That's how they're telling their jokes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sometimes they're talking about stuff and they go off on a tangent, but they go off on a tangent because they've had this thought, and this thought was a real-time thought based upon something they saw or an interaction, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not just, hey, I'm going to talk about walruses today, so I'm writing 8 minutes of walrus jokes. And sometimes that does work. I'm not saying it doesn't, right? Your Dimitri Martins,
yeah,
your improv comics. There are comics that can definitely do that. But when you think about being memorable, you've got to be authentic. And then that leads to the second part of that. Nobody can steal your jokes when they're about your life.
Yeah.
Right? We talk about, we had a conversation about like white comedy versus black comedy and cultured comedy mm-hmm. versus basically white culture. And I said, white people really don't have a culture no more. And they said, what do you mean? I said, well, most of everything you guys do isn't about yourself. It's about X, Y, and Z or this people or the experience of being a dominant race or being in charge or being people being inferior. You're a male versus a female. You know what I mean? It's not about your culture. So when you do jokes, if it's not about your culture, it has to be about your experience. With us, we can do jokes about our culture and black culture, but if you don't do them about your experience, eventually you're going to be joke stealing. Look at Carlos Mencia, right? Look at some yeah. of these other comics who do jokes or steal jokes because it's not about your experience. If you do a joke about your five kids and how they're named, guess how many people can do that joke? Only people who have those five yeah. kids with those names, right?
Definitely.
All right. If you do a joke about your name Salazar and all that, well, only a Hispanic comedian who's a woman with the last name Salazar can do the last joke. How many of those are there, right?
Yeah.
And so it's you can't be copied. You're going to definitely stand out. And I think it just helps you tell a better story when they're about your life. There's a passion, a belief. People can hear it in you. You're more authentic. And it's just, you're a better storyteller, too, when you're talking about what you've actually been through.
Of course. Well, so there's only one other joke that I kind of wanted to bring up that you sent me. And the last one is you talking about being aggressive at work.
I'm not really made for an office job. Yeah, everybody in Seattle's all like passive aggressive, and I'm more like aggressive aggressive. Yeah, I'm not gonna do a subliminal Facebook post about you. I'll just catch you by the Keurig and punch you in the throat. And then not only that, like you always get a project with somebody you hate. I got a project with Bob last week. Bob's a racist. Bob hates me. I hate Bob. Somebody was like, what are you going to do about that project? I was like, I'm not doing shit. They're like, you're not worried about getting fired? I said, no. I was the affirmative action hire. Bob better figure that shit out. Shit. No experience, no degree, same pay. I can't understand why Bob's mad. Fuck Bob. Shit.
My passive aggressive aggressive aggressive.
Yeah, your passive aggressive aggressive aggressive.
It's funny you say that. So I did a feedback mic with some people the other day,
mm-hmm.
and it's one of those where I got in a room and somebody had a mic going, and there was like 25 people in there,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't know any of them, right? And I was like, no fucking way, this is fucking awesome. Fuck yeah, I'll do a 5-minute set. I ain't even got nothing I want to work on. I'll just do the set for these people. Because I'm suit man. I'm a producer. I really yeah. don't do a lot of shows anymore. So it was like, haha, I'm going to do my shit. Gold star. And they were like, you only do like 2 lines about this passive, aggressive, aggressive, aggressive shit. You should do more of that. And I was like, you got a point. And it came from the idea of locker room, what was it, office linebacker. Right?
Uh-huh.
And not the same, not came from that, but that's the idea is when you're a big dude and you're 6'2 and you're 270, and even the Incredibles, like remember the Incredibles when he comes back and the guy's cussing at him about
yeah.
giving, and he's just like, are you really fucking yelling at me? The demeaningness you deal with at work for people, right? Yes, Karen, you're right. And just, there's a whole, a whole amount of feelings when I talk about that people get into. I'm pretty sure you've dealt with it as a woman.
Yeah.
And Bob getting in your way or just taking something. You're like, did you really just like pull out your machismo and take something and cut me as a woman? Like you got in my fit. Like I want to punch you in the dick. Like, you know what I mean? And even when I talk about just like the office potluck and white people making ethnic dishes, like I'm about to make some tamale. Hey, Stephanie, do you want to try my tamales? I bet you they're better than your aunt's. And you're just looking at them like, bitch, did you just say that to me? No, I don't even eat tamales. I've hated them. My aunt's, you know what I mean? They don't even know your background story. You get what yeah. I mean? Those are all things that we deal with in the office. And I think I'm glad you brought that up. There's a tension. There's a underlying tone of shit that happens in your office. There's people that say shit to you at your work that if they said to you in real life, you'd knock their fucking teeth out. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you don't even get to do nothing about it either. And they say it into you a way you can't go to HR about. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're so... And it's just, I guess, a root of pain. I guess that really went long-winded. there's a whole mountain of shit we deal with in the corporate world as a minority. And usually it's passive-aggressive. And as a male and as a big male and as an athlete, I'm aggressive-aggressive. And so I really have to not respond how I want to. Like when somebody sends you the, this is my third attempt. I heard you the first time. It's been 25 fucking minutes. I haven't responded. No, I don't have an answer for you. Do you want me to say that in the email? No, I don't have an answer. You just wait for your answer, right? Mm-hmm. right? The post on the certain people aren't washing their dishes, so we're no longer providing dish soap. Fuck saying certain people. We know it's Jennifer and Christine. Those lazy bitches never wash their dishes. Why don't we just put up a sign about Jennifer and Christine instead of everybody get, you know what I mean? Why don't I have a 10-minute safety meeting? Because Bob's an idiot and he stapled himself with the stapler. Like, I don't... Never mind. These are all things that happen in the office space.
I'm seeing that.
But we, you know, the show The Office, you know what I mean? Kits on that, but it was just... As a aggressive person, as a football player, as, you know, ex-military guy, you know what I mean? I'm not ex-military, but for people who've been in those environments, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You go into the corporate world and you've got this 5-foot-nothing guy yelling at you or talking down to you or basically calling you stupid. And you're like, dude, I heard what you fucking said. Like, let me see you at lunch. you can't do that, but you want to.
definitely. All right. I have one last question. And that question is, what is the end game you would love to see out of comedy? Like, where do you want to see comedy and producing take you?
Man, I'm going to the top, baby.
and what does the top look like for you?
I say that with conviction. It's rearranging the game. It's having a city that's my host city. And then it's having the comedians that I work with and the people I'm mentoring and giving them feedback and teaching them how to produce, eventually hitting their goals, and Suitman doing shows everywhere. The first show I really did that made a change, I don't know if you know this, was called Def Comedy Jam.
Okay.
Have you seen my version of that?
No.
So you're probably like, I've heard of Def Comedy Jam. And no, you haven't. It's DEAF. We translate comedy for deaf and hearing audience.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm a sneaky motherfucker, right? That's pretty creative, right? She's like, okay, all right. I didn't expect
that. I see it now.
But I'm deaf in one ear. I'm HOH, so I'm mixed deaf, just like I'm mixed in real life, right?
Oh, there you
and
go.
I have a whole set about how they harass me about not being deaf enough to throw this fucking show. Fuck them. Anyway, so everything, I'm fighting everywhere I go. Everything I do, there's some group that's like, I don't like this, that you can't do that. So knows I'm doing something right. But think about this. Every weekend in a certain market, I could do one of my shows and nobody's doing it. So imagine you've got Mixed and Misidentified and WAP coming to your town. Well, what's WAP? Women Are Funny, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, on top of that, I could also do Deaf Comedy Jam versions of those shows. So the first show is DCJ WAP, meaning that it's a deaf accessible version of Women Are Funny.
Okay.
Oh, fuck. Where are they doing that? Nowhere. Where are they doing a deaf version, a deaf accessible version of Mixed and Misidentified, a whole mixed lineup? Nowhere. So when you brand these ideas and now you've got your own club and you work with other clubs, so I'm already in Boise, I'm already in Oregon, and I'm already in BC.
Okay.
And I'm in less than 2 years in. Those were Suitman Productions are going. It shows. Now, I'm not in the club, I'm not on the club yet, but once we start on the club, now the idea is, we're doing this shit everywhere. Every club that I can work with will have a Suitman production once a month. Every once a month, those Suitman productions probably won't be ran by me, but they'll be ran by comics and other producers that I know that I can entrust to run a show with the same kind of values and skill set. but I'm still going to be booking under the same database of probably 6,000 to 7,000 comedians that are non-white males, because that's what I specialize in.
Mm-hmm.
The long-term thing is to take over and make a network of comedy shows and experiences across the country where people can go to comedy and know they're going to feel like they're represented and see someone like them on stage. Nobody's ever done that. And so there's no ceiling to what I want to do. It's how hard do I want to work? And I want to work very hard. I want to make all the money, and I want to be in every state, country, and city I can. And these shows need to be in every state, city, and country they can be. Black and Proud is a black and gay show. Mixed and Misidentified is a mixed show. Raw is an all-woman lineup. Soul Sister Sundays is a black woman lineup. Laughing Through Recovery is a sober comedian show. These are all people who need to be seen.
Absolutely.
Sober people need to see comedy that doesn't endorse drug use,
mm-hmm.
right? Do you know what I mean? Like, these are all things that you can't say are happening in any market but need to be done. You know what I mean? So there's no ceiling. It's just how hard do I want to work? And I want to work as hard as I can. I want everybody to have an experience that they can enjoy. I want comedy everywhere to be equitable and fair for everybody.
Sounds great. I love it. And I see the drive and the passion, and I can't wait to see where you go with all of this.
That's the best part. I mean, it was an epiphany the other day that this is it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting in D.C. I had a crowdfunded trip to go to the inauguration. I met John Legend while I was there. He shouted out Suitman while I was talking to him. I got him to say Suitman on camera, which I haven't chopped up and put out there, but it's on my Facebook, you know what I mean? And I was just sitting there. I was like, people paid for me to come give my version of the inauguration. I had people like, this is the SNN, the Suitman News Network. I've only been watching your lives all day, right? The same thing when we had our major riots, and I went down to the Chaz. I was in the middle of that shit in Seattle for 8 hours when we were blowing up cars and shit was burning up.
Mm-hmm.
I was down there just giving my humble opinion. No personal opinions, just, hey, this is what happening. Look at what they're doing over here. That drive, that passion is just, this is what I want to do. If you can't tell, like, I've woke up a whole lot, haven't I? I told you. But there's nobody doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great feeling. And then to have the story, I mean, there's one thing I didn't touch on, and I want to touch on this beforehand. I do a show called Give Love Laugh. I've been doing this show since I started producing. Give Love Laugh is a donation show.
Okay.
We donate to the Union Gospel Mission, and then I'm doing a Mother's Day version where we donate back to Mary's Place, which is a shelter that helps women and children. I was a part of those programs, hint, hint, wink, wink, meaning I grew up homeless.
Okay.
Not only did I grow up homeless, but I'm starting out my comedy career where shows that are already giving back and not going for profit, but for charity, right?
Yeah.
Most people can't do that, right? Most people just want their damn money. I don't charge for any of my shows yet because I'm looking for sponsorship, not viewership.
Okay.
If I can get in front of 10,000 people a month, yeah, you could say I could charge them, but I should also be charging businesses to advertise to these unique markets, which is more lucrative. And then means we can get our comedy out to more people who are underrepresented and minorities, because they're the ones that usually can't afford the ticket. There's so much into what I'm doing and meaning that these little things I can explain in a fascinating idea that long term, I could talk to anybody. Let's get some money rolling. You want to see more black people on stage? Hey, come to Suitman Productions, because that's what we're doing. And now we're actually throwing classes for young comedians of non-white descent. What? Now I'm creating a group for young black producers so we can get them to produce events and get them to understand. You set it, they'll show up. You set a price, you calculate things, you get them in there, you get them in the door. Nobody's doing that for us.
Mm-hmm.
You can't stop that. You know what I mean? Like, it's a lot to bite on. It's a lot to want to take on, but you can't stop that. And it's going to take time, but as the momentum goes and one person hears Suitman, they're like, okay, he said it on Stephanie's show, let's see what else he said. Oh shit, he says it on every show he's going to.
Yeah.
Damn, this is who the guy is. Damn, he did grow up homeless. Damn, he's, again, we talked to being authentic.
Yeah.
Nobody can have my story. That's my story. That's my life. And Suitman has been the great way to embrace that and share with people an experience and make them feel better about their lives in comedy.
Well, I wish you nothing but luck, and like I said, can see the passion coming off you full beam, and I love what you're doing. So thanks, Sunshine. So much for sitting with me and being willing to talk about your perspective and what you're trying to do up there in a lot of the Pacific Northwest. So we'll kind of keep an eye on you. And thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you guys so much for joining me. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Dante. And the next time you're up in Seattle, Washington, you definitely look him up and Suitman Productions. As always, I want to make sure to say thank you to Dave the Prophet for providing the music. His beats are provided by Curtis King. This has been Finding the Funny. I'm Stephanie Michelle, and I hope you enjoy.
I told my mama on the phone, it ain't no check to check. No more Honda Civics, baby, time to whip that vet. Lyrics, beats, in the hooks, I'm a triple threat. Glow up on my Jesus peace, now I'm living blessed. Looney Bin, BYE, you know we down to ride. Try to kill me with this mic, suicide. Since I got on mad, all I hear is fucking lies. More money, more problems, fucking certified. Doja Cat, throw it back. David blowing back. Blowing up on Super Saiyan, but I'm fucking holding back. Never stop until I put my fucking city on the map. 3 a.m. on Ocean Air, put the pedal to the max.
You just don't like the joke because it makes you feel uncomfortable. That's not racist.